Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day is casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, September 4th, 2020. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps and steps and steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal, the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, it's Casual Friday. Ben Dixon from the Benjamin Dixon Show will join us. Then, Matthew Film Guy from the film world will join us, give us some movie recommendations for the weekend. Meanwhile, job growth slows, but unemployment rate drops. I have a feeling Donald Trump will let you know that. Also expected to be adjusted downward next month. Meanwhile, Trump reportedly referred to dead U.S. World War II Marines as suckers and losers. 70% of new COVID-19 cases are coming from red states in 2020. And the suspect in the right-wing extremist shooting and killing was killed during his police apprehension. Nancy Pelosi, Steve Mnuchin appear to have agreed on a stopgap to keep the government open, yet to get anywhere on coronavirus relief. Meanwhile, Bill Barr and Postal Service leadership are chipping in to undermine the election. Just as mail-in voting begins in North Carolina, as they send out more than 600,000 ballots. The DOJ to charge Google with antitrust violations, yay. But rank-and-file prosecutors say the case is not ready, and the deadline to file this case seems to be driven by politics. Boo. House Oversight Committee calls for a Hatch Act investigation over the RNC. U.S. looks to pull funding from the World Anti-Doping Agency, putting our participation in the Olympics in jeopardy. Lastly, a video from March shows cops' abuses led to the death. Daniel Prude. All this and more on today's program. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. It is a casual Friday, really, in many respects. But I guess maybe not so much technically speaking, but in many respects, this is the last casual Friday that we're going to have until the election. I mean, to be quite frankly, frank with you, I'm starting to get a little too anxious for it to be that casual. So really, the only thing that's making this casual is my soft collared shirt and the fact that I didn't shower this morning. So, or shave. So apologies for those of you who have to see me today. We are now officially 3 months out. No, excuse me, 2 months out. Less than 2 months out, I should say, from the election. And this is Labor Day weekend. We will be taking Labor Day off and playing our traditional Labor Day show with some, I think, one or two new things, some labor speeches. And then it is going to be I don't even know what the metaphor here is for this, but the tentative, not tentative, I don't know, the rush to, I don't even know what to say. We're going to, you know, it's all hands on deck leading into the election. And then I guess, you know, also perhaps, I'm not sure what we're going to do, but it happens to be our 10-year anniversary of the show on Election Day. Wednesday, November 3rd was the first podcast of this iteration of the show, and the election is Tuesday, November 3rd. So I don't know. Contemplating doing a 12 or even maybe a 24-hour show, but I don't even know that at the end of that there's going to be an election result. In fact, I don't think there is. I think we're going to talk about that today with Ben Dixit, because as we get closer to the day, I probably will repeat myself. What looked abstract a couple of months ago is starting to look a little bit more concrete. Here is Donald Trump. This is a story that's dominating the thing. And I know we'll talk to Ben Dixon about this in terms of what this is going to do to Donald Trump's election chances. I mean, story like this, it really has some teeth to it. I think in at least, and we'll talk about this with Ben, but it seems like the entire rhetorical war is being fought over the, you know, Republican women in the suburbs and Republican voters, which is, I'm not sure if that's the best strategy, but that seems to be the one that's coming out. Now, obviously, this is not a this was a piece in The Atlantic by Jeffrey Goldberg, who I find odious, incidentally, I should tell you. But nevertheless, it is having its desired effect. Here is, it probably is true. I mean, of course it's true. Is there anybody out there who in any way would be surprised to hear that Donald Trump said these things? But here is...
said he was a dumb Southerner.
Here is, I mean, Donald Trump said as much about John McCain. It's just now that he's dead, you know, like, but here is Donald Trump explaining how he doesn't get enough credit for throwing a good funeral for John McCain. And he never said those mean things about the soldiers and the Marines.
Keith Kellogg, who's a highly respected man, couldn't believe when he heard it. And he knows everything about all of it. And to think that I would make statements negative to our military and our fallen heroes when nobody's done what I've done with the budgets, with the military budgets, with getting pay raises for our military. It is a disgraceful situation by a magazine that's a terrible magazine. I don't read it, but I just heard about it. They made it up, and probably it's a couple of people that have been failures in the administration that I got rid of, and I couldn't get rid of them fast enough. But or it was just made up. But it's unthinkable. As far as John McCain is concerned, I was never a fan, and I will admit that openly. I disagreed with him on the endless wars. I disagreed with him with respect to the vets and the taking care of the VA. I wanted to do it a much different way, and I think it's proven to be a much more successful way when you look at the success we've had with the VA and with our vets, with choice and with accountability, all the things I've got. So I disagreed with John McCain, but I still respected him. And I had to approve his funeral as president. We lowered the flags. I had to approve that. Nobody else. I had to approve it. When you think, back, I had to approve either Air Force One or a military plane to go to Arizona to pick up his casket. And I approved it immediately. I had to approve the funeral because he had a first-class AAA funeral that lasted for 9 days, by the way. I had to approve it. All of that had to be approved by the president. I approved it without hesitation, without complaint. And I felt he deserved it. I disagreed with him on things, and he was a tough guy, but I felt he deserved it. For somebody to say the things that they say I said is a total lie. It's fake news. It's a disgrace. And frankly, it's a disgrace to your profession. Now, with all of that being said, you'll speak to Keith Kellogg.
There are contexts where you can imagine people saying these military personnel are suckers, right? Like they are being exploited by the military industrial machine. Imperialists are using them as chum in their wars to get resources and whatnot. But I don't think that's the way that Donald Trump was looking at it. I mean, maybe to a certain extent, but it is a little bit surprising to say that about Marines buried in Europe who died in fighting Germany in World War II. Well, I mean, I think like, but regardless, just analyzing this as a political thing, Donald Trump wouldn't have spent 3 minutes in the dark, ticking off everything that he approved of.
I called the World War I ones the losers, Sam.
They were like,
it was the World War I.
Yes or no on this. And I literally had to hold up my thumb and go, yes.
Let me ask you this.
Who would do that if I didn't like him? Who would do that? I don't think so.
If the U.S. Marines who died in World War I weren't losers and suckers, why was there World War II?
Was this World War I? Okay. Oh, well, those guys are suckers. I thought it was World War II. But I think it's, I think they're worried about this, to be honest with you, because this is just one of those rare instances where it could resonate with a couple of people. I mean, for the most part, the people were happy to have him crap on McCain, it seems to me. But this is a little bit different. And I think, and certainly everybody's aligned to make a big deal out of it.
Here's what was reported by The Atlantic about what he said about McCain's funeral, too, if you want to read it.
Trump remained fixated on McCain, one of the few prominent Republicans to continue criticizing him after he won the nomination. When McCain died in August 2018, Trump told his senior staff, according to three sources with direct knowledge of this event, "We're not going to support that loser's funeral." And he became furious, according to witnesses, when he saw flags lowered to half staff. "What the F are we doing that for? The guy was an effing loser," the president told aides. Trump was not invited to McCain's funeral, but I had to okay it. He wouldn't be buried now.
It's so funny that he thinks that him saying, "I didn't even wait to approve it. I could have like went and golfed and then like, hey, I'll think about this and then I'll approve it." But actually approved it right away. And by the way, it was 9 days long and I'm not bitter about it. So
not at all. It's not like I have all of this burned into my brain because I've resented him so much. No, that's not
it's like
it.
The thing he remembers most from his presidency is having to do that shit for John.
Yeah, and also just the idea, him approving it in his mind means he did the entire funeral. He was not allowed to the funeral that was 9 days that he arranged. And what a woe is me.
Where's the catering? I haven't heard back from the caterers.
Lot of effort. I went down. I said, "Canopies? No, not for this crowd. We need something that's a little more flaky." Folks, have you ever watched The Office? Did you know that there are 9 other countries with their own versions of The Office? Is that true? I had no idea about that.
There's a lot. Ricky Gervais is a very rich man.
Holy cow. I had no idea about that. I watched the original Office before, way, 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 way before, right when it came out, because I was in that world a little bit. The British one was really quite superior. But I would be interested to see other ones in other countries. How could I possibly do that? You can access content available around the world with no geo restrictions when you use ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN lets you control where you want sites to think you're located. You can choose from nearly 100 different countries, giving you access to content that is not available in your little crappy region, ladies and gentlemen. For less than $7 a month, ExpressVPN lets you access thousands of new shows and movies on Netflix, Amazon Prime, Disney Plus, tons of other streaming services. You just fire up the ExpressVPN app on your computer or on your TV. You select a location, you hit connect. ExpressVPN is incredibly fast. It doesn't slow down your connection, so you can stream content in HD quality with no issues. Get the most out of your streaming services today at expressvpn.com/majority. And if you use my link, you'll get an extra 3 months of ExpressVPN for free. Again, that's expressvpn.com/majority, expressvpn.com/majority to learn more and get 3 extra months free. Our friends at SunsetLakeCBD.com have an announcement to make. Matt, you may want to pay attention to this.
Oh, I'm listening.
They are dropping the pre-roll prices from $20 to $15 for Labor Day weekend. So Majority Report listeners can get a 5-pack of CBD hemp pre-rolls for $12 using the promo code LEFTISBEST. That's a big deal. That's an $8 savings. So they have a sale, and then they're still letting the coupon code LEFTISBEST, which gets you 20% off, work with that. I hope you're writing a note for yourself, Matt, because I'll tell you something. I got to be careful because I don't want to, cigarette smoking. I stopped that many years ago. Don't want to go back, but I've been doing a little bit of CBD pre-roll, and it is an interesting sensation.
Yeah.
Because with the tincture, I just go to sleep, which I love. And they have now a 3,000 milligram tincture. They have a CBD tincture for your pet, which I'm contemplating because our diabetic cat and his brother are going to be in our apartment. And they're going to go nuts. And so we got to help them adjust. I don't know. I'm contemplating it. I'm not sure. But the CBD salve has been fantastic for my eczema. Great for my buddy who had shingles, his back. We've had arthritis sufferers who tell us the salve works great. And I wasn't going to say anything about the eczema, but it's been multiple occasions now where it's cleared up from it. Folks, Sunset Lake CBD. They are a family-owned farm up in Vermont. They've been working with the University of Vermont, who are experts at one of the hemp-growing sort of experts around the world. They're working on regenerative farming practices. They use no pesticides, 100% pesticide-free, organic. They pay their workers a $15 minimum wage. That's their minimum wage on the farm. The company is majority family, employee owned. It's a great company. Salve, the coffee, it's fantastic. Matt, you want to speak up for your, they sent me a huge spliff.
Yeah, the foot-long spliff?
Yeah.
You going to smoke that guy?
I don't know, maybe, but I think it's going to take me a while. But
you need to find the right occasion.
Talk about Labor Day.
Exactly. Oh, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, except for, I got the kids. They're not going to enjoy dad wide smoking like 18 inches long, that thing. It's massive.
A parody spliff.
Yeah, exactly. But Matt, will you tell the smokers out there?
Smokers out there will want to check out the Smalls line they have. Hawaiian Haze or Special Sauce Hemp Flower Smalls. Basically little hemp buds that you can put right in your grinder. I find it very innovative little product line. So check that out.
There you go. I'm sending CBD to gifts to people across the country, if you can believe it. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Oh, SunsetLakeCBD.com. Use the promo code LEFTISBEST. They're fans of the show. LEFTISBEST, one word, you get 20% off. And remember, this weekend, you can get a $20 pack of pre-rolls for $12 this weekend when you use the coupon code LEFTISBEST, one word. All right, quick break, and when we come back... Oh, wait, we don't need... Is he there?
Yeah, we can just bring him on right now.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen, the host and proprietor of the Benjamin Dixon Show, Ben Dixon.
Ben, Sam, how you doing, man?
You got, You gotta work on your OPSEC on that picture. Yeah.
Fortunately, I'm not that beautiful. So
I was going to say, you're looking pretty good. Things have been. So Ben, how are you doing? Thanks for joining us.
Hey man, good to be here, man. Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure.
So, obviously, we are post Labor Day is when really most people, I guess, or the sense is that people start paying attention to the election. I think it's probably not the case this cycle, but I think there's still a percentage of people out there who are just about to tune in. There's a whole set of people that I think it's very hard for you, for people like you and me, to sort of fully appreciate that just don't pay attention to politics.
Yeah.
And after Labor Day is when they're going to. And it sounds like one of the first things they're going to hear about is Donald Trump calling dead Marines from World War One losers and suckers.
Yeah. That should be pretty jarring. I was really hesitant. I'm covering that on my show. And I was like, you know, the story has like a lot of overtones of nationalism and patriotism. And those things are usually wielded against us. But I mean, this is like next level. If you read the story, which I actually did, instead of just the headline, sometimes we do that. He actually said that he didn't want to go because not only were they suckers and losers, but he didn't want to mess up his hair, Sam.
That was previously reported, wasn't it? I mean, that was at least not as definitively, but it was out there that the rain was going to mess with his hair. And so
right.
They said that they couldn't get a motorcade or something.
Right. He tried to blame it on the motorcade and that the Secret Service wouldn't drive him there and that it was hard. But, you know, he made up a lot of excuses and it may have been reported, but I did not hear that part about his hair. And just like you kind of described, there are going to be a lot of people who read that sentence for the first time ever and realize we're dealing with a man so obsessed with his ego that he would not only disrespect our troops, which is a phrase that I absolutely hate,
yep,
but he would do it on behalf of his hair.
Yeah, no, I think that I guess my question is like, who does that resonate with that is not? And because I want to get on to sort of like the main topic, I think, which, you know, which I'm starting to see them build up. But this is, you know, this is a pretty like, who does that undermine his support with, I guess?
I mean, he was already losing support with troops, if I'm not mistaken, and with retired veterans. But I think this is kind of like anybody who is teetering on the edge. You can have those people, Sam. There's some people who are never going to betray Donald Trump. Right. They're going to go Donald Trump to hell and back again. But I think from a poll I saw from Ipsos and ABC that came out today about his rhetoric on race, on the racial climate and law and order, that message itself isn't even resonating with Republicans the way that he thought it would. Only 13% of college or non-college educated white men think that he's being that this is being helpful. So to me, if he's performing that low in that category specifically, there may very well be some people, I don't want to get too optimistic, that are teetering on the edge. So maybe this would be a thing to kick them over. But I have been guilty of being overly optimistic before.
Right. I mean, it's interesting because I think that we got into some of this. I had Stuart Stevens on the other day, which was an interesting experience, but we can talk maybe a little bit more about that a little bit later. But he pointed out, which, you know, I knew, but tend to forget, Donald Trump won the election with less votes than Mitt Romney mm-hmm. lost the election in 2012. Mm-hmm. And so largely the story of Donald Trump's win in 2016 was not about the number of votes that he got. It was about the number of votes that Hillary Clinton did not get.
Yeah.
And that dynamic where you have two disliked candidates going into the election, almost in a race, who is going to edge out for the least disliked of the two of them, it doesn't seem to be in play here.
Right.
And one would think, I mean, it feels like, and obviously this story is not put out by the Biden campaign. I mean, who knows? But that they would be working on driving turnout as opposed to the persuasion, which we saw during the DNC and the RNC. It's really more of like, because I'm with you. Like, I feel like Trump's votes are basically locked in.
Yeah.
They're not going to grow, and they're not going to, but they're also not going to shrink much.
Right. 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 No, I think, and here's the other concern, right? When you consider that COVID-19 is now fully politicized and wearing a mask is fully politicized, Donald Trump supporters are going to show up to the polls. No questions. People who are opposing who are going to vote for Joe Biden, it's a good chance most of them won't. They'll probably try to do mail-in ballots because they're taking it seriously. So when you add that on top of everything else that you just said, Sam, I agree. I would think, like, of course, drop the story if you have the story, but put as much energy in getting the vote out as you are dropping a story like this. And we don't know for sure that this was dropped by the Democratic Party,
right.
But if one I had it, hope. I sure would. Yeah, one would hope they at least have that level.
Well, all right, so let's get to this, because the thing that seems to be clear to me is that you've got Donald Trump during the RNC trying to shore up his base, essentially, or shore up the Republicans. Like, you know, the whole the RNC, I think, was about giving license to Republican women to vote for Donald Trump. Look here, I pardon a black guy. Look yeah. here, I've got I welcome immigrants into our country. I'm not as bad as they say. But the other side of that is this. I mean, we have Bill Barr going out there, you know, telling lies about fraud in balloting, mail-in balloting. They had to walk it back, but they got to say it where they wanted to. The walk back is obviously just printed in, you know, some written article, but he gets to say it on television. They have the Postal Service was talking today. Then in like they have a task force that says we may not be able to do this with the ballots. They're setting it up, and Donald Trump's out there saying, vote by mail and then go in person and vote. And it seems to me they are building the opportunity, the case to invalidate the ballots. Yes. And here's the scenario that scares the hell out of me. It is November 3rd. They come in at 6 p.m. or whatever it is, 7 p.m., 8 p.m., maybe into the next morning. Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, I don't know, Arizona, pick the state, North Carolina, Georgia, mm-hmm. Florida, maybe all of them. Trump is maybe in the lead in some of those states with just the ballots because of what you've just expressed, right? That there's going to be more in-person voting by Trump supporters, relatively speaking, than Biden supporters.
Right.
And we get a redux of the Brooks Brothers riots, except for this time they're wearing Patriot prayer hats or they're Proud Boys. And literally, what happens if they try and shut down the counting of the ballots in that moment? And where are the federal police that Trump has mobilized? I mean, talk about this, because this is starting to actually get me becoming more and more real in my mind anyways.
Yeah. So that's exactly how I covered it the same exact ways yesterday, Sam, because sometimes we get caught up on his hypocrisy or like, oh, he's such a hypocrite, or his stupidity. We're like, oh, he's so dumb. He just encouraged his supporters to break the law. No. He just encouraged his supporters to help give him a justifiable reason to invalidate the election.
Yep.
And his supporters are going to do it because they do any. I mean, hell, some of them were drinking bleach. So, of course, they're going to show up to vote twice. And so this is a nightmare scenario. And then you actually put a fine point on it. The fact that the Proud Boys will show up, that all these people will show up and have actually a lot more venom than even the Brooks Brothers, Brothers riot. And so the thing is he has the Supreme Court in his back pocket. People think that John Roberts is like quasi liberal now because he sided on a couple of cases. No, don't forget John Roberts is solidly conservative, and he has the Department of Justice, William Barr, saying that, oh, I don't really know if it's illegal. Well, you know, I don't know if it's illegal. And then Wolf Blitzer was like, you're the Attorney General. He's like, oh, well, I guess I'm the Attorney General. Right. So he has the Department of Justice. He has the Supreme Court. He has all these people on the ground, and he is just just giving them the orders to go and help him invalidate the election. So it is a nightmare scenario, and I don't know what the solution is other than everyone who wants him out putting their life at risk to go to the polls in an enormous fashion.
Let me add to what he's got. He's got the state Supreme Court in Michigan. He's got the state Supreme Court in Wisconsin. He's got the state Supreme Court in Florida. And unlike in 2000, when everyone was shocked, when the Republicans appealed to the Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court, everyone within the legal profession was shocked that the U.S. Supreme Court picked up that case.
Yeah. Yep.
But that Florida Supreme Court at that time was a liberal court, you know, just for broad strokes. This time around in Michigan, it is conservative dominated court. In Wisconsin, conservative dominated court. In Florida, conservative dominated court. If it goes to these state Supreme Courts, I would not be surprised if the Democrats try and go to the U.S. Supreme Court, if the U.S. Supreme Court says, we're not getting involved.
Right.
In that situation.
Yeah.
Wait, what? What about 2000? Okay. Yeah, no, that was a mistake. We're just not getting involved. In fact, they don't even have to justify it.
Right.
That makes me nervous. You also mentioned the Brooks Brothers riot and this one being more venomous. Roger Stone was involved in the Brooks Brothers riot.
Yep.
He was coordinating it from a van down the street.
Wasn't Kavanaugh involved in that somehow?
John Roberts was there. He was one of the rioters. And I mean, you know, the riot, but they were banging on the, you can watch the video, but the point is next time they're not going to be in suits. They're not going to be the lawyers. They're not going to be the operatives. They're going to be these street thugs.
Right.
And Roger Stone, obviously has been developing relationships with these Proud Boys. And this is real. Like what happens literally in these scenarios?
I tell you what happens. He also has something else to his advantage. He has Joe Biden, who is going to be encouraged to, and I don't even think he has to be encouraged. Joe Biden is going to be more concerned with the institutions, with the stability of our union. And so Joe Biden will concede much quicker than Al Gore did. So, Donald Trump has.
You think so?
I think Joe Biden will. Because I know Barack Obama is preeminently concerned with the stability and the institute. He has more respect for the American institutions than anybody else. I know he would be on the phone like Joe, Joe, let's live to fight another day. You know?
I think, if you've got a coordinated series of basically like of those, you know, for lack of a better term, Brooks Brothers riot, you know, happening in a county in Wisconsin, in a county in Michigan, in a county or two in Pennsylvania or in Florida. Like, I think these guys are out there right now. They're saying, here are the 5 or 10 places. We need people mobilized there. This is where it's this Democratic controlled county and that Democratic controlled county. And we're going to have, there's already going to be this whole sort of like, Bill Barr has built this sort of like, you know, anecdotal case leading up to this that the it's fraudulent. Trump's been saying it. Like you say, you're absolutely right. He's telling his people to go in and vote twice because the fact that, wait, it's Republicans who are messing with the, you know, the fraud. That's not going to keep anybody from saying the process is corrupted and it doesn't work. They're going to throw out all the mail-in ballots if 10% of them are duplicate ballots by Republicans, or it's going to take the counting is going to take that much longer to do, or it's going to shut down balloting at, you know, in the locations. I mean, there's going to be total mayhem. There's going to be chaos and they're going to have these like little stormtroopers to come in. And what is the, you know, the gray haireds gonna do when all of a sudden there's a bunch of Proud Boys there, you know, banging on the doors going, don't count those votes. Those are fraud, you know. I mean, this is, I don't know what the answer is. Like, I don't even know how Democrats prepare for this.
Because think of the only response that there could be, right? So they're distancing themselves from Antifa, right? But like, for all intents and purposes, there would have to be a counterbalance to remotely give the appearance that the majority isn't on one side. And that's something that Republicans are really good at, because they're louder, because they are willing to go and put themselves on the line, and because the party supports their radicals. The party supports their radicals. Without there to be without a countervailing force from the left, then it's going to appear that all of the weight of the moment is in the hands of the right wing. Now, if there was a countervailing force, could you imagine what would happen in this country if the same number of venomous left wingers showed up to confront the venomous right wingers? That's the scenario that I have in my head that makes me think that somebody like Joe Biden would capitulate before he gets to that point. Because at that point, I mean, it's like, who knows what happens after that? Because I don't really want to verbally game it out from there. But I don't know. So unless the Democrats are really strategizing around this, I really don't know. Like, I don't know if they're going to have like an army of lawyers there with
they're
personal
have
security.
An army of lawyers, but with, I mean,
with,
at the
with
end
personal
of the day,
security.
Yeah. Know? I mean, I don't think that the Democrats would say, like, you know, coordinate with Antifa to get Britain. I don't know how they would go about doing that, but I don't know how, like, anybody would be able to predict where you need these people.
Right. Right.
Right? I mean, you could sort of guess. I mean, I can sort of guess where hot spots would be. I mean, a good campaign strategist would know that, like, this locale, this county, that county. But, you know, and I am not convinced that Russian interference made a significant difference in the 2016 election. But I do think that you can use, you know, and the reports are now, ABC News is coming out that the Russian troll farms, et cetera, are pushing the insecure nature of mail-in ballots, which suggests to me that at the very least, there is sort of like a tacit, keep going, guys. Because that's our theme. That's what we're working on. I mean, I think it's obvious to everybody, but that's the case. But that just sort of reinforces it. This is undoubtedly the strategy, because Donald Trump knows he's not going to get more votes than Joe Biden. Mm-hmm. There's no way he's going to get more votes than Joe Biden. The question is he going to get 4 million less votes than Joe Biden? 3 million? 10 million less than Joe Biden? We don't know, but he is looking in some very narrow places, and he knows that he's going to need something else. And this is a guy who should be, and probably is, be convinced that he's going to go to prison if he gets out of office. And so I'm concerned.
Yeah.
And frankly, this is not one of those scenarios where Democrats need to blankety blank blank. I don't know what the answer is to this.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think we may be past the Rubicon on this, right? Because the answer to this would have been to relentlessly hold him accountable at every stop along the way. Over the last 3.5 years, we saw a piecemealed impeachment process that really was just the kabuki theater. And we see now that there's a reticence amongst the top. I mean, and Nancy Pelosi is too damn powerful, right, to really sit back. And the best that she has are sort of some tweets. And so now we're at a point where Donald Trump really feels like he can get away with it, because he's been getting away with it. So I don't know what they do at this point, but what should have been done is holding him accountable at every stop, so that at least he would not have felt free to go on national TV and encourage his supporters to help him invalidate the election.
Look, the only thing I can tell people is that if you have the opportunity to vote early,
yeah,
in person, obviously a lot of people feel at risk. But if you're going into a hardware store,
yeah,
or certainly if you're going to a restaurant, but if you're going into any type of locations with your mask on and you feel comfortable doing that, you should feel comfortable going in and voting early. You know, it's one thing, I understand, you know, and it's a valid concern to be waiting in line indoors in November, in particular, and worried about, you know, standing there and perhaps, you know, breathing in some stuff. But right now, if you can go absentee ballot and you can go do it, do it. It's better than mail because you want that ballot counted on that day. That's the only thing that I can imagine that people can do. Now, that opportunity doesn't exist everywhere.
Right.
But that's something that, you know, you can do.
Sam, real quick, to that point, I had a chance to interview David Becker, who's the executive director for Center for Election Innovation and Research. And he said that he's spoken to supervisors of election across the country, and all of them are going above and beyond to ensure that there's maximum distance between every single voting booth, that they're making sure that after every person who votes, they're sanitizing the station every single time. And he also said, just like you said, he said that the risk is actually going to be lower early voting, and even on election day in some of these, some of the arenas that they're erecting,
right,
through the NBA, said the risk is going to be lower to go vote than it is to go to the grocery store. So I just want to throw that out there and encourage everybody. I think the only way we beat him is actually putting some skin in the game in terms of exposing ourselves. And I think I'm talking to myself more because I haven't worked myself up to even go to a grocery store at this point. So.
Yeah, no, I hear you. It's scary, and it's the alternative is scary too. I mean, I have to say, you know, and I keep saying this, and I'm just about there that this may be the first time that I vote for a presidential candidate on the Democratic ticket in a blue state. Mm. You know, it's possible I voted for Obama in 2008. Quite, you know, maybe just want to be part of that on some level. But aside from that, I've not, well, maybe Mondale. But I don't think.
Sam, you cannot be old enough to actually vote for Mondale.
I missed it by a week for Mondale. Okay. I missed it by 2 or 3 weeks, actually. I was 18. So I really wanted to vote for Mondale. But but that's it. And because I do think that in this sort of miasma of the election that we're going to have, right, there's going to be such chaos that if Joe Biden wins the popular vote by 10 million, it makes a difference than if he wins it by 2 million.
Right.
And
right.
Even if those votes come from New York and come from California or come from, I don't know, big blue states, I mean, that makes a big difference.
You seem pretty confident that Biden would actually fight this, though.
I felt that. I think that he would. I think that there's no voice. Look, Joe Lieberman was the one, Bill Daley. These are the guys who Gore, telling Gore not to fight it.
Yeah.
But now you've got Hillary Clinton coming out right now, like she said a couple of weeks ago, fight it. Do not concede. I don't know who around Joe Biden wouldn't be telling him to fight it, to be honest with you. And I think there's an argument that if you have a coordinated, if what is going to happen, if what I am speculating happens, or some variant of that happens. I mean, look, if Bill Barr doesn't like the result and he goes and files stuff at the Supreme Court, they're going to have their bevy of lawyers that are going to come in.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing. And I think that's at least likely. This other thing that I'm talking about seems a little bit far-fetched to me, but as we get closer, you know, and you start to watch what's going on,
it's not that far-fetched.
No. And so I think that's an argument that, like, this is an assault on the institution of voting. Look, do you think there's going to be many people who are going to say, don't fight this to Joe Biden? I don't think so.
Well, you know, and thinking about it in that context, if by chance he doesn't fight it, I do believe, like, especially if he hits 10 million in the popular vote, the people will fight it. I don't think there might not be much that we can do in terms of overturning the results, but I do believe at that point, the people will just say, F it all, COVID-19, whatever. We've been out here protesting Black Lives. We're sure as hell going to get out here and protest Donald Trump. And so there's a lot of uncertainty ahead. And I think the best way to stop it is for us to just put on our hazmat suits and go vote. in person.
I've never, obviously this is every, you know, almost every day during this era has been one of those things. Like I have no sort of personal historical or, you know, any other comparison to the era that we're in, but this is unique, I think, in the context of what we've seen. I don't even, you know, even like it, I don't know, 68. I don't feel like it was.
No, I think we're beyond 68. I think there's
something really ugly that could be coming down with this stuff, but
especially because of who's behind Trump's Twitter account, because the president has shown a willingness to burn it all down with his own words. That's the difference between now and then. I think tensions might have been as high in 68, but we didn't have a president in the White House who was willing to see it all burn for the sake of his ego.
Right. The power was not with, you know, the ones who were the power dynamic was different.
Yeah.
And the agendas were different, from each other. I don't know. Anything else? We left it all on the table.
We left it all on the table, man. We're just wishing you all the best.
Right, exactly. CBD. That's what I've been doing. I've been taking a lot of CBD to try and deal with where this is all headed. And I don't know. Just give me your assessment of what of your sense of like where. I guess on that question of how many votes that Joe Biden's going to get, do you have a sense that he is mobilizing? I mean, I'm not as concerned. I mean, some of the, when we look back on the things that, that hindered Hillary Clinton's vote, there was a lot of people who just didn't like her.
Yeah.
A big chunk of that I'm sure was misogyny, but also a misogyny that had been sort of nurtured over so long that they, you know, were convinced that it was about specifically something who else. She was. Mm-hmm. And then I think there's also, you know, people who didn't like her and sort of, you know, her policies, et cetera, et cetera, you know, and then a subset of them were like, Donald Trump's going to lose anyways. I don't need to vote for her. Yeah. And she didn't really, address, I think the issues of a subset of the Black community, particularly in certain areas, and the voter suppression and whatnot, and you know, corruption issues, you know, or at least perceptions. What do you think about Joe Biden? I mean, do you have a sense of that? I mean, there's no third party on the left this time around. There's no Jill Stein, so that wasn't, you know, I guess very narrowly interpreted, that was, you know, a possible reason to lose one or two of those states, at least in sheer numbers, but they wouldn't have necessarily voted for Hillary Clinton. But, you know, third party took a couple of percentage points, both the Libertarian and the Green. There's a Libertarian candidate, but there's no Green. I think Trump made this point the other day. Or there is a Green candidate, but he's
not getting any traction.
Not getting any traction. What's your sense?
In terms of like the election,
who's mobilized to vote, what the energy is?
It was the Trump supporters. Now, I don't want to downplay the fact that there's a lot of us who completely understand the score, right? And I think there's a lot of progressives, quite frankly, who, I mean, be honest, I have not yet verbalized the words that I'm going to vote for Joe Biden, and I'm not sure that I'm ready to verbalize those words, right? But we've set that aside because we see the existential threat that Donald Trump really is. So there are a lot of people on the left. There are a lot of people in the liberals, neoliberals. Everybody wants to get rid of Donald Trump. The only thing that's standing in our way, the only impediment is COVID-19, right? That to that end, I think the energy is behind Donald Trump supporters because they don't even believe that it exists.
Right.
So in that regard, I think the energy and the momentum is with Donald Trump. And because it's like Joe Biden isn't inspiring people to go out. It's the response to Donald Trump being so dangerous as inspiring people.
Without a doubt.
Which in this case might actually be just as meaningful because he is a tremendous threat.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. I think an unenergetic vote for Joe Biden counts as much as an energetic one. And if the energy that gets them to the polls is a hatred and a fear of Donald Trump, It is both effective and justified.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ben Dixon, the Benjamin Dixon Show. People can check that out. We're on YouTube, Patreon.
Go on YouTube. I usually don't make this appeal, but go subscribe to my poor little channel. You know, David and Sam, you guys are coming up on a million subscribers, and I'm trying to break 50,000.
Because maybe you should do an expose on what's going on with Pac-Man with this, because this is bizarre. Have you seen like he's added like 75,000 subscribers in 2 weeks? That looks a little bit dicey to me.
David is on a roll, but David, you know what? I know it's a running gag between you two, but really, like, David and you, both of you guys have been so helpful. Like, I never gained traction on YouTube, but what you guys have helped me do over the years has helped me in so many other areas. So I'm super excited to see you both approaching a million subscribers.
Well, I'm saying this right now to all of our nearly million subscribers, go and subscribe to Ben Dixon's show. You will not be sorry about that, I can assure you. Ben, thanks so much. Really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. Always a pleasure.
All right, folks. We're going to take a quick break. And do we have our film guy guest?
I do not see Matthew here yet.
Okay. Well, then let's do hopefully he's watching. Let's do another clip. Here is Donald Trump responding to the primary in Massachusetts. And I guess this could work. But it is, if it does work, it really does sort of, suggest that, there is a huge, I don't know, portion of the electorate that is just really, really clueless. Here is Donald Trump talking about Ed Markey, his win in Massachusetts.
Check out all of the statement he's made on everything. And now he's going the opposite way, but he's agreed to the manifesto entirely. So maybe he'll do that. And then he figures later on he'll go. But everything he said is right, because he has no control over what's happening. The radical left has captured the party. They even elected a person that nobody ever heard of, a senator, it's been a while, against a young, good-looking Kennedy. By 10 points in Massachusetts. Did you know Kennedy lost in Massachusetts? You know why? Because he wasn't a radical left. He was like a semi-normal person, just slightly left. No, but think of it. This is what's happened, and this is really what...
I mean, Ed Markey's been a senator for 7 years. He was a congressman before that for decades? Like, for, was he in Congress for like 30 years, maybe more? It's true. Maybe outside of Massachusetts, people don't know who he is. He's, you know, he's not the most prominent senator, but the idea that this guy's a radical and he's a danger, he's been in office for decades.
He joined the U.S. House of Representatives in 1976.
So there you go. He's been he's playing the long game. But Trump is trying to push this notion that Joe Biden is beholden to the radical left. And like I say, God willing, but I just don't think it's flying. Like, when you've got to go and spin that with Markey, it doesn't make any sense.
Well, like, and then you have to pump up nerds like Joe Kennedy III. Like, he's a nice, normal guy. Like, that's not what Republican voters want to hear.
Well, it's also not what Republican voters think. They're like, wait, Kennedy's a normal guy? What? I think there's just a sort of a desperation. And that's why I'm you know, expressing this concern about what they're going to do on Election Day. Because I think we are getting very close to that time where everybody's going to be looking around going like, how is he going to win this? And if there's no way, then I think they're going to start to really, you know, lay out their plans to win it without winning it, as it were. All right. With that said, it is now time, ladies and gentlemen, for a, if you are a familiar with this program, every now and then, every I don't know, fourth or fifth Friday, we get to play this little ditty to introduce this guest, not Ted Alexandro, but go.
Shit.
Play the music. There we go.
Matthew, the film guy, is choosing your streams. Cassavetes on Netflix and other such themes. Maybe you'll watch one and learn a few things. Please recommend me a movie to stream. Matthew, please recommend me a movie to stream. Matthew, film guy.
It looks like he panicked and we might have lost the film guy.
He came up and he had a picture of Ted Alexandro because he works on Ted Alexandro's show. And then he forgot, like, he's trying to promote his eBay store, and he ran away. So I guess, is he going to come back?
I hope so.
I hope so, too. What do you guys think about this, about my fever dream of what's going to happen on election day? Am I completely, oh, wait a second. Here he is.
There we go.
We'll talk about that later. Matthew film guy. So wait, no, we're not going to see your picture. Where are you?
Wait a minute. Ta-da.
Oh, there you
here
go.
I am.
Jeez. Wow. There you Ooh, go. I'm losing hey. It, bro. The limited edition Majority Report t-shirt inspired by that musical hack, John Benjamin. I don't know if you
truer
saw
words.
I've been on a tear lately. I dug into Stuart Stevens, and I really let that John Benjamin have it.
Yeah, I look forward to similar treatment. You know, that's a sign of respect and love when it comes from you.
And so now, Matthew, do you want to tell everybody about your experience now that you've become a Hasid?
Sam, are you Jewish?
That beard, honestly, is.
Are you
really
Jewish?
Something, yeah.
It's right, when was the last time you put on tefillin, Sam? When was the last time?
We should explain this because this is actually one of the seasons where people, they'll blow the shofar. The Hasidic community in and around Brooklyn. They probably do this worldwide, but in Brooklyn in particular, they will, they see you walking and you look like me.
If they see you walking.
And they see me walking and you look like me, they will come up to you and they'll ask if you're Jewish or you. And then they'll ask you if you want to lay tefillin, which is it's a ritual where you bind a leather strap and a box on your hand
that has prayers inside it.
Yes, and on your forehead, and that comes from the
Deuteronomy 6:9.
Is it Deuteronomy 6:9?
It is.
Is it really?
Yes. Why did I remember that from Hebrew school? Who knows?
That's pretty good.
And you shall bind it for a sign upon your head and heart and soul and all that. Yes, you know it.
Yes.
We almost got a minion going here, Sam. Let's do it.
Rosh Hashanah, they shake the lulav and they give you that drug. I mean, we don't need to go into this. Jibber jabber.
It's casual Matthew, Shabbat.
Matthew, how are you? You're losing.
I'm okay. I'm losing it, bro. I mean, listen, I'm trying to survive this fucking horrible year. What can I tell you? COVID deprivation, you know, just. The number of people who we care about that we've lost. I mean, this is the first time we've spoken since Michael passed away. And that hit me so goddamn hard. It was 2 days after I was on the show. And people are, it seems like, you know, famous and more sort of just in your life are dropping like flies. So it's, that's hard. And Mark Maron's girlfriend, the filmmaker, Lynn Shelton, that was insane. Now we just lost David Graeber. So, I'm dealing with crushing death and loss, which brings me to the movie segment today. No, I'm kidding. But it's definitely part of, watching movies is to try to keep some sort of sense of grace and some sort of sense of the eternal and something interesting, at least even, you know, from the spectrum of distracting you to helping you heal. So, you know, I'm trying to fall back on those coping mechanisms. But meanwhile, haven't had a haircut or a beard trim in almost 9 months, and I'm losing it, bro, you know?
Right. No, I hear you. There have been times where I just have, you know, obviously, I think for us and for everybody who watches the show, the sense of loss, I think, is sort of like that narrative is certainly enhanced and maybe established because of Michael's death. But, you know, I look around and I see so much of it. I just, you know, that taints my perspective when I see what my kids are going through during this time. And even like my diabetic cat, which was an outdoor cat, and like the idea that he can't be outside anymore, and his cat brother, like, you know, these are small things, but you see them in the context of this other greater loss. And it is difficult. It's super difficult. I watched a movie the other day that I found actually really inspiring. And then it also occurred to me, like, I can't believe I didn't hear about this guy. But it's not called Stockton. It's like Stockton on My Mind or Thinking. I can't remember exactly, but it's about a mayor in Stockton, California. And this guy is really dealing with the sort of like incredible challenges that Stockton has. I would encourage people. I know I'm stepping on your segment a little bit, but
no, please. This is the world we're in. Friend,
and it was really inspiring. We should also have that Stockton mayor on the show, but that aside.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is a weird time.
I look forward to not watching your recommendations. So it's nice.
Well, I appreciate that. I think that's a sign of respect in certain cultures.
That's right. That's right.
And so, and
you know, even I just want to say, even we just the actor who was the lead actor in Black Panther died. And I don't know if you heard about that,
Chadwick Boseman.
And literally the last time that I hung out with Michael in person was when I made him come with me to see Black Panther, and I made him come to the fancy bougie iPic movie theater. So like that was just like a another wave of return of loss. I mean, I wasn't like a huge fan of that guy, but yeah, it's just every little thing comes a little bit more sensitive, and especially because we've been so isolated. I mean, my normal life as a film guy is to be stuck in a room, but it just seems like the whole world being shut down heightens that. And you know, at first it was like a spring break. Oh, eternal spring break. There's nothing to do. There's nothing to miss. And I think right now it's starting to get that edge of just like, you know, it's starting to feel more like solitary confinement. But, you know, the multiple streams of films and TV, I think, are definitely a saving grace.
Are you going out? Like, what are you doing? Give me a sense.
I walk the dogs. You know, like my number one way of getting outside is I walk the dogs. They got to go out for, you know, once or twice a day. And I do that. And I'm also basically the one in charge of doing most of the grocery shopping. You know, Mary's been in school. She's off now for a month. But I go to the grocery store. I go to the pharmacy. I go to the, you know, whatever, the liquor store. And that's basically it.
Her school is remote. Right.
Yes. Her school is all remote. She's going to LaGuardia Community College for occupational therapy assistant. And it's actually a struggle there. They've had to adapt. How do you actually learn to actually work with people over Zoom? So that's been another kind of.
You mean like
weird...
with their their knee is problem?
Yeah,
like
it's occupational therapy. Yeah. Meniscus.
Yeah.
Meniscus.
Meniscus.
Yeah.
Because I got a problem with my knee.
Well, if you're willing to be a test subject to a student, yeah. Well, I'll see what I see what I can do. I think you're thinking more of like physical therapy than occupational therapy, but as long as you know,
I need physical therapy. Yeah,
there's some among other kinds. Yeah,
okay.
But there's an overlap there. But yeah, having to do all that remotely, and but it means that while she's going to school, I'm sort of the householder, and that's what I get to do. I get to go to the stores and bring home the bacon.
But still, I'm working. I got to ask. I don't want to get too information. I don't want to pry in your relationship at all. But has she complained about the beard? Because I would.
Are you kidding me? Ask me if there's a day that she's not complained about it. This is like, it's basically reached passive aggressive proportions at this point. I'm ready to take it off. I had said my birthday was last week. So
happy birthday.
Happy birthday to me, Jew boy. But I said that I was going to cut it off on my birthday, and now it's been like a week. We've been doing renovations in our bedroom, so things have gotten in the way. This is the last time you're going to see me with it. So the experiment is coming to a close.
I am surprised that she has not done that in your sleep. I mean,
in my sleep, right? Honestly, well, like, I don't know. I'm thinking maybe the samurai thing. If I do this, I don't know.
I honestly feel like if I were her, I would have already like.
No, I understand.
Drugged you and then shaved your beard off.
I'm a little nervous. This will be the first time I go somewhere that isn't one of those four places I mentioned, like in an actual barbershop. But
to a barbershop to do it? Why don't you just cut it yourself?
Oh well, I need a haircut too. I haven't had a haircut in 9 months, so
I haven't either. I've been cutting my own hair
with a Flowbee.
You know what? I tried to get one. They were all sold out.
Do they make them? Do they still make them?
I think they still do, yeah. I don't know why you wouldn't bring that back.
You've got much sturdier hair than me. I need somebody who can actually, help.
I every now and then I just go like this. I go, oh, that seems to be sticking out. And then I just cut that. That's basically
it. Didn't you have your kids doing it? Wasn't Mila cutting your hair or did that experiment end?
Mila started out the first time, I don't know, about 3 or 4 months ago, started out and just took a big chunk out of the side. And I was like, you know what? I think I'm good. I'll do it. And then I just grabbed it and just cut like that. And I think it's, I have a big margin of error with my hair.
Yeah, exactly. Curly. So I got zero. Really I got zero.
Yeah. So, all right. So Matthew, with all this said, I've already given my movie recommendation. That is the documentary Stockton. Although I watched the Michael Jordan documentary.
Ah, that's on my list. That's on my list.
And I have to say, I really enjoyed it. I found that also inspiring in some ways.
And like, I'm sure you grew up hating Jordan like I did, right? I'm from Northeast Ohio.
Hating Jordan, although I almost on some level, like ignoring him. When Len Bias died in 86,
you stopped doing cocaine.
And the Celtics started to like just fall apart. I was so heartbroken. And then, at that point, like I'm doing comedy at night. I don't have time for this stuff.
Right.
I'm going out.
Right.
And I lost track of basketball for.
Boston didn't really have a team all those years, really.
Yeah. And so I didn't really watch Jordan. He was still that sort of upstart who was no, Bird or Magic. I was aware of him, but I didn't really. And I followed him like a casual sports, but I didn't really sort of like realize how the sheer dominance. And I think I didn't want to, but I really enjoyed the movie.
Well, you didn't have him tear your heart out as a fan of another team. That's what happened to me as a Cavs fan, growing up a Cavs fan. And he, two very historical times, just like, broke your soul. So but I come around to it. I respect him. Although I always remember his, did they include in that documentary, his Hall of Fame speech where he basically just like, it was like the opposite of when they go low, you go high. He like went super low. Do you remember that?
Yeah. I don't think they did. Actually,
I think they don't touch on it.
Really? Okay.
He had final cut. I think.
Yeah, oh, very much so.
but it surprises me that he wouldn't choose to include that because he chose to do it. Like if you were to sum up, he was like, this is to all the people who said I couldn't do it. Like, you're Michael Jordan. You won everything. You're the greatest of all time. You took this moment to like in your face.
I didn't get the sense that he's like a great guy. I got the sense that he is like incredibly competitive and extremely sincere in that incredible competitor. Like he's not a guy I would necessarily want to hang out with, but it really does show you like, what kind of determination you need in that type of,
to have
what you're willing to do.
Yeah.
And the price of it too.
Right. right. That's why it stuck with me. You know, I before we get into the whole thing, I just want to mention one of the great things I have been doing during the pandemic. It's working with my friend and yours, Ted Alexandro, on his comedy career. He's now a retired stand-up comedian, and so he's doing the Ted Alexandro Show live stream twice a week, Mondays and Thursdays.
Is he retired YouTube. Or is he in just in? Is he?
It's young? Well, since stand-up comedy is basically illegal, or you have to do it in like a parking lot. So he's right. like not. So desperate that he needs to go do like the worst kind of comedy venue you could think of, like people in their cars and so on.
I don't know why.
Not that he's knocking others,
but okay, go ahead.
Well, it's people who need to definitely do that who have no other choice, and that's where it is right now. But he's, you know, he just had a baby, and so he's raising his kid.
They want to.
I don't think that's an option.
They feel compelled.
I think they think they either have to. No, you're right.
There's a lot of comedians who cannot stand not performing.
Right.
When you get into it, I mean, I was in that mode for a while where it's like, if you haven't performed, I've never been somebody who gets into exercise. Like I've never had that feeling of like, I haven't worked out.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
10 years.
I'm not surprised to hear that.
Right. But there are comedians who get like that too. Like,
yeah, I get that too. And Ted's, you know, he's a 25-year veteran. And so he's fallen back on doing this live stream, which is great. People should come check it out. But also we put out a bunch of specials. You know, he did an Instagram live only special, and then his new special called Cut Up just came out yesterday live. And that's made up of all stuff that he filmed, basically just using the club cameras in the Village Underground and Comedy Cellar and Helium. You know what I'm talking about, how they record every set. So he had all this tape of stuff that, you know, now he can't basically go to a theater and do. And we got together and edited it into something spiffy. And I actually brought a clip, if you wouldn't mind, a quick 30-second taste of the special, because it's for free on YouTube. And I think your audience would definitely love it. There's a lot of overlap.
This is the downside of Zoom. You can't stop your guests from running a clip. They can just pop it up on their...
Well, no, you can. Here, Brendan's got it. Oh, check it out.
Guns. My stance on guns is admittedly a bit extreme. Not a mainstream point of view. I'll tell you that right off the top. I think if you want a gun, you should not be able to get one. No exceptions. I think wanting a gun is a bit of a red flag. You should be put on some sort of list. Just my opinion. It's not a mainstream point of view. But it feels good to say it.
That's good. That's a funny joke. I like that joke.
Yeah. There's a, now all I get the more where that came from.
Now I get the cut up because it's essentially a montage of jokes, and you construct a set out of different locations and different times, and thus cut up.
You
which
get
is
it,
a double
Sam.
Entendre, because that's also one of the things you say about somebody who's funny is a cut up.
Thank you for explaining the joke. It really is helpful, actually, in this context. And I appreciate that. Yeah. So, yeah, everybody should go check that out on YouTube at Ted Alexandro, YouTube/Ted Alexandro. And you can ask Ronald Reagan, who is definitely a member of both pods, that it's good stuff.
Okay.
And it's been fun. It's kept keeping me busy, and it's been great Reagan working with
really
somebody
around,
like him.
Apparently. He really...
Well, you know, that lawyer money, you know, you could just burn it. You know, who cares?
Exactly. All right. Well,
so,
Matthew, let's move on to the real reason why you're here. All this other chat is just a way of filling time before you give us the film guy recommendation. So before you give us the recommendation, as you always do, give us your thinking about what went into choosing this recommendation, because it could be escapism, or it could be let's understand this era more, or it could be, I guess that's basically the two options you have, right? I mean,
yeah, I ping pong between those,
or a greater understanding of what's going on in our lives.
Well, Sam, I think it doesn't come to a surprise of anybody who's watched this show with me on it is that I'm basically trying to get into not the escapism, but trying to understand, if not the exact political moment we're in, at least something more about the species, you know, something more about the human condition that has allowed us to slide into the fucked up situation that we're in right now. And, you know, I personally find, and I know everybody's not the same way, but I personally find that a well-made film that's explaining or depicting or giving us insight into some dark, sometimes morbid, but also, you know, kind of insightful material helps to it releases the burden in some ways, like to understand, to have some sympathy, to resonate. Even if, you know, like I show these films to my senior citizens film appreciation class, and they always say like, oh my God, that was difficult to watch. But then when we have the discussion and we get into it, it's like everyone always feels like so much better, either about themselves or about some situation, and most of the times about the movie.
Okay. And just with that said, what you're doing is you're basically giving us the difficult part and then not giving us the sort of opportunity to sort of discuss it. And
I would love to lead a Zoom class with the Majority Report audience at some point. If people can join my,
why aren't you doing it?
Actually, Sam, a few people from the Majority Report have joined my class. The next semester starts in 2 weeks. You can go to commonpointqueens.org.
Why don't you start your own?
I mean, maybe I will. Maybe I should, Sam. Maybe this is the fulcrum of that happening. I love doing it. It's an excuse for me to watch a lot of great movies and to get into it.
What if you did? Why isn't this your business? I don't understand. Well, you need the North Shore JCC to use their Zoom
connection. Central Queens, Central Queens, yeah.
Central Queens Zoom.
Yeah, look, Sam, I'm still holding on to the dream of being a film editor. You know, my movie career is on pause with the rest of the industry
now.
So
there's nothing. Nobody's going to be doing anything for another six months at least.
That's true. All right. All right, let's get it going. I know Mary's been telling me to do that for years, too.
Shave your beard and then get your own Zoom account.
All right, in order of importance, I will do that. No, I have my own Zoom now. I have my own Zoom. It's here. You can see it. I fixed it. Well, thank you for that, Sam. That's the kick in the ass I needed.
It is. It's so obvious. I can't believe you haven't done it already.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, we'll see. You know, what I like to do...
set you up with a Zoom account? And
I have a Zoom account. That's what I'm talking to you on.
All right.
Thank you for that. All right. So I want to talk about a film by a female filmmaker who basically got started in the French New Wave, named Agnès Varda. And I don't know if the film audience out there knows who she is. She was sort of, like I said, one of the sort of ancillary members of the French New Wave. But she made movies that were amazing all the way up until she just died, I think, like 4 years ago. And I'm just starting to get into her body of work. I saw her first movie, Cleo, from 5 to 7, and I wanted to see more. And this movie... I showed to my class, and it was definitely a hard watch, but it is so inspiring to see a filmmaker capture something about this. Well, I'll get into it. The name of the movie is Vagabond by Agnès Varda from 1985. And it's basically about a woman, a young woman in like her early 20s, who we don't get a lot of background information, but she's like a hitchhiker and she's chosen to be kind of homeless. She's chosen to go from place to place. It's exciting. It's more exciting than you're letting on, but that's okay. It's actually an amazing movie because she bounces from person to person. And the movie's all about the tension between freedom and sort of alienation. You know, on the one hand, she doesn't want to have a job. She doesn't want to even live anywhere. She begs on the street and she puts herself in all these risky sort of situations. But she also can go where she wants to go and do what she wants to do. And there's various vignettes of her on the road. And it actually starts with her death. So it's kind of like, it's almost like a Citizen Kane-like structure where you see, like, how did it get to here? But it's also so much deeper than a movie like Citizen Kane because you don't get any pat answers. You get a lot of situations with her interacting with different types of people. Some middle-class people say like, oh, I so envy you that you can just go where you want. You don't have to have a job. And some more judgmental people. Yes, I can see a question forming.
Well, it sounds a little bit like Easy Rider or Kerouacian, if you will.
I would say there's maybe some overlap there on the Venn diagram, but also it's so very French because, you know, there's like not a lot of exposition. There's not a lot of explanation. Like she somewhat tells you about what her home life was like or what led her to this, but you're never quite sure if she's reliable to listen to. You know, she hooks up with some people who want to help her and then she basically rips them off. So you're never always just like sympathetic to her. Like she's a complicated character. There's a scene where she runs into some back to the earth hippies. Like, remember, this is the middle of the 80s. So the hippie movement is basically dead and buried. But there's a few people who are like trying to like farm and do their own thing. And they have sympathy for her. This is one of the most telling scenes. They have sympathy for her and they set her up like, here's a plot of land. You can just till this and eat what you want. And she's like, I don't want to. She's more of like the punk ethos. She's just like F you and F everything. And, you know. It's very hard to pin her down, which makes it, I think, a deeper film. Yeah, go on.
Why now? Is this, I mean, like,
Because we're why this movie now?
Yeah.
Because I think we're faced with a similar situation. We're forced into it. You know, we don't necessarily, we're atomized. We're lacking connection to, you know, whether it's family or friends. You know, most of my friends have left New York City. I don't know about you. You've left, but you know, I think we're having to fall back on a lot of our sort of, you know, individual sort of coping mechanisms. And this movie is all about the tension between, you know, the structures of society and the limits of society. And I think that's something that, at least for me, resonates with what we're going through right now. You know, how much we are relying on our country to tell us how to behave in a situation like this, and how much we can do for ourselves. So I don't know.
You watch it.
And you tell me. I think it's now, in the ballpark there.
If I am not mistaken, I believe Agnes Varda died in March of 2019. And I believe she was 90
years old. Wow. Well, time is just dilating, right? Yes. So that is
actually an IM I just got from Sin. So I don't know if that's
thank you.
The case.
Thank you. It feels like it was longer. But yes, she was making films right up until her death. I also want to just say I recently also watched Red Dawn. Mary inspired us to watch that again.
The original?
The original. Yeah. Your favorite. Yeah. And I just have to ask you, do you recall that they actually, since it's so laughable that the Cubans were part of the invasion force, right? It's like the Cubans and the Russians are invading. Yep. The movie, which I didn't remember from years ago, actually hangs the lantern on that, if you will, by saying like the Cubans are like, this is not, I grew up to be a revolutionary. Like, do you remember the Cuban guy is sort of the one evil guy?
Yes. He is the Cuban commander, comes in and he's like, I am now the police.
Yeah.
And yes, no, of course I remember. That was actually very Young Lions, if you will. Do you remember that film, Young Lions? Young Marlon Brando?
No, I never saw that. Yeah. Your sympathies are torn.
Yeah, where they question, like, you know, the Cuban commander was like, this is not, I am the counter-revolutionary now, not the revolutionary.
Yeah, and in the end, the Cuban guy's the one that lets them go. Yes, like he could
had sympathy
have shot them
with the guys who were reminiscent of Castro's, you know, march to the jungle. Yes,
that was hilarious to me that they knew it was so dumb they couldn't even get away with the Cubans really being involved.
Take it easy.
Wolverines.
I think people can still find some of those Break Room Live Wolverine posters, videos that we did back in the day. Matthew, Film Guy, always a pleasure. The director is Agnes Varda. The film is Vagabond. People will check it out, and they will go and see Ted Alexandro's shows and specials.
Thank you.
And then they will sign up for your non YMCA or JCC sponsored film class.
Everybody go to my letterbox, then you can message me there, letterbox.com/LangdonBoom, and we can talk about getting together, all you film nerds.
All right. Bye-bye, Matthew. Thanks, Sam.
Losing it less now, bro. Thanks.
I appreciate that. All right, folks. We're going to take a break, head into the fun half of the program. Matthew said commonpointsqueens.com, but it's .org. Fair enough. We're going to head into the fun half of the program. Just a reminder, this program relies on your support. When you become a member of the show, not only do you get extra content, but you support the free show. And much appreciated for those who are supporting the program. We're putting out the AM Quickie every day. We got a little bit derailed on our hopes to monetize it, but it is picking up steam again after the people sort of reorient their schedules a little bit. Devoid Reality says not Cuban. The guy was not Cuban. I don't know what that means. You can find the AM Quickie at amquickie.com. Also, don't forget, we got merch. shop.majorityreportradio.com. We are days away from our Carpenter pencils being released, and we've got T-shirts and hoodies on there, and hats, and mugs. So good time to start stocking up on your, well, I guess a little bit early for Christmas gifts, but maybe your, I don't know, Thanksgiving gifts, election gifts, who knows? So check that out. Don't forget, check out, Nomiki's show, youtube.com/thenomikishow. She is going 5 days a week or 4 days a week, I think starting, is it next week? Next Tuesday, maybe? We will let you know about that. That'll start live, I think, 3 p.m. every day. So check that out. Jamie, what's happening on the Antifada? Who is
Jamie's mic?
Jamie's mic is not
plugged. Yeah. While she does that, I can plug TMBS.
Please do.
Still nothing, Jamie. This week on TMBS, we had Malaika Jabali, Guardian columnist, on to talk about Kenosha, Kyle Rittenhouse double shooting. There it is, Jamie. We also had the No Olympics activist Albert Corrado on to talk about how he lost his sister to a police gun shooting, police shot her, and they apparently tried to tamper with the evidence in that. Surprise, surprise. Geez. So, pretty heavy show. Check that out, folks. Patreon.com/TMBS. Also, I will be doing a twitch.tv/literary hangover stream. I'll probably be flying around in Microsoft Flight Simulator. Two of the photorealistic cities they have are Bismarck and Fargo, North Dakota. So maybe I'll show people around those towns, or maybe we'll go to more
fun.
Maybe we'll go to more interesting places. I'm not sure, but Microsoft Flight Simulator, twitch.tv/literary hangover.
Jamie.
What? It's gone again. Jamie, your mic is not working. No.
Well, all right. Well, why don't you mime, and I'll see if I can interpret what you're saying. Check out the Antifada. You can find us on Patreon.
Oh, guns. It looks like they're going to talk about guns. Yes or no?
We're going to be typing and writers. We're going to be walking with our fingers on the Antifada. I can't quite see.
Marching against Capitol.
And power to the people. Check out the Antifada. Yep. Thumbs up. We're also going to be reviewing movies on the Antifada. You can find it at patreon.com/theantifada. We'll be right back. Jamie will be with us. Maybe she will be talking. Maybe she will just be signaling and miming and reacting. All right. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back after this.
Left is best.
Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous. You're a little bit upset. You're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude.
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 You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Some good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27. 1/2, 5/8, 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd.
Don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance.
Ooh. Grandpa.
I had my first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you. You fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, going to take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jab.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Good. Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. You guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
I think I might be a Nazi.
Agree.
No.